of one member, but I'm pretty sure we will have members coming in. They go pick up their lunch between our different committee hearings, and it's just tough to have everyone on time. Members, I think that we are in the process of organizing working committees in order to conduct the work of the policy committee. I have talked to many of you who have expressed interest in the issues that are really coming to us from different sources, from different commissioners as the priorities for policy changes, new policy recommendations. And so we will be announcing formally, probably towards the end of the week, the composition of these committees, but we will be working on issues related to early childhood education, the issue that is before us today, which is the high school post-secondary reform, then issues around assessment, testing, and student testing and assessment, and then teacher assessment and evaluation. Those are the four pieces, and we are also trying to coordinate with the House on different aspects related to ELL as well as other requests that have come from the governor's office for increasing funding in some areas where we really need to review policy. So today we have a great opportunity to dive into a conversation that many of you have had individually with respect to really looking at what we do with our high schools today and how we can begin to have a more vibrant, profound conversation about what we need to do with high school graduation and encouraging our kids to not only graduate but pursue a post-secondary options. So in that committee, members, we have Senator Kent and Senator Rood will be leading that effort, and I would like to ask Senator Kent to please continue with the hearing today.
Thank you, Senator Torres-Ray, and thank you for your leadership on these critical pieces. I've really appreciated the approach that this committee is taking in looking at some very important issues for education as we move forward. I'm particularly excited that I will get to work on this K-12 and higher ed element, and with Senator Rood as being involved in the Higher Education and Workforce Development Committees, we see so many different opportunities, and so this is going to be an exciting time. So next, then, I would like to introduce the panel presentation on redesigning the transition from secondary to post-secondary education. And today we have with us Commissioner from the Office of Higher Education, Lawrence Pogemiller, the Commissioner from Minnesota Department of Education, Brenda Caselius, and the Minsky Chancellor, Stephen Rosenstone. Thank you. And when you're ready.
Senator Kent, members, we are really excited to be with you here today to talk with you about an idea that we have been talking about for the past year. Director Pogemiller, myself, and Chancellor Rosenstone have been going around talking about high school redesign, and I think a little later you'll also get a chance to hear from Irondale High School, who recently was awarded from the Humphrey School Innovation Award in Government, a very prestigious award for their efforts around early college. And it's just very exciting to see some of these examples. There's also examples on the Range, as well as Long Prairie Gray Eagle, South St. Paul is beginning some collaboration. So we're seeing these little innovation pockets coming up where people have realized that we have to do something different in high school. The way that we'll approach this conversation today is we'll go through a short presentation on some of the major goals and objectives that we've outlined that we could consider together, as well as then Chancellor Rosenstone will give some of his background on what he's been doing in collaboration with DEED around workforce and skills and how he's shifting His work with his community colleges and universities, as well as then Director Pogemiller, and how he's collaborating with higher ed and private and the University of Minnesota as well, and how we all are trying to work together to make high school more relevant and meaningful so that kids are prepared, they have the right skill set, the right knowledge set in order to get a job or go to college. So I'll go through that, and then also, colleagues, if there's things, just interrupt me if I miss something. And we'll go through this, and then we'll, after they give their comments, then we'll take questions, if that works well for you. Okay. So overall, our goals are really pre-K through 20. And it is a bit ambitious to think that already in preschool, we're talking about getting ready for college and career. But we see that if you don't get a good first start, then you just are behind all along the way. And so we want to ensure that when we are presenting these ideas, that we are thinking all the way back to preschool and making sure that we're looking at all of those developmental areas as we put together this plan. So getting ready to learn. Then during your K-12 experience, ready for post-secondary success and getting every kid graduated on time and ready. And then ready for this career pathway that they're going to be going into either right out of high school or after they've taken some additional post-secondary coursework. The vision then is to align both systems, making sure that we've aligned our assessment systems with measurements of readiness for post-secondary education, so that students who meet proficiency don't have to take another exam upon admission, that whatever that high bar is that we say is college and career ready, that's the high bar that then is accepted at our post-secondary institutions in the state. And they can begin their education without remedial coursework. But if a student is not on track and they're not ready for post-secondary education, then we would provide that targeted intervention earlier while still in high school. And when high school students are ready for post-secondary, we just unleash them. We let them soar and increase opportunities for them with post-secondary credits earlier. We did this in some legislation we passed with having PSEO available for vocational careers at 10th grade and in the prior sessions. And so that was a big advancement. But there's still additional work we could do with college in the schools and PSEO. Advanced placement, international baccalaureate coursework, concurrent enrollment, and tech prep coursework. And then fourth, we want to better align students' educational pathways with the workforce needs. And Dr. Rosenstone will speak about that after I'm finished here with this short presentation. We want to better inform families and students about the careers that are really out there in Minnesota so that we can keep our kids here and that they can get trained here, and what the market is saying are the jobs that are available, as well as give them information about the salaries that are offered in those jobs, what types of skill sets they'll need to have, what are their aptitudes, and what's the realistic possibility of them getting that position. This means that that would give every single student a personalized learning plan. So what are the benefits of doing something like this? Well, we think that there's increased efficiency and cost effectiveness for taxpayers. You're not paying twice. We also think that there's a higher return on investment for taxpayers because kids will be getting the skills and the knowledge they need to be successful and be employed. For students, it's more students are prepared for post-secondary education to pursue academic programs that meet their interests and their passions, and also prepares them for high-demand, high-wage careers in the future. Reduced costs for higher education because of the limiting of remedial education that they would have to do. Reduced student debt because if you can take coursework earlier for college credit, you can save thousands and thousands of dollars for families and students, and we think this is a wise investment. Students also enter the workforce earlier, and we think that this is good for Minnesota and this is good for our kids and help them because many times they will change jobs multiple times through their lifetimes. It's not like when we were young and we would stay in a career for a long time. They will have to change multiple times, and we think for students it also helps them understand that they're a lifelong learner. and that they will continually have to go back to school and get new skills for the new emerging workforce that's out there. And then for business, we think that there's better alignment in our educational systems to meet their needs and what they're saying they need us to have kids know and be able to do. And there's a strong conversation happening with that. And we think that they'll have better employees who have the post-secondary credentials that are prepared, and they'll have less retraining to have to do. So we think that there's benefits all around with this package and what we're trying to do. So I think I'll turn it over to Stephen. He can talk about his statewide tour and what he's learned from the community, and then Director Poga Miller as well.
Thank you. Chancellor Rosenstone.
Senator Ken, Senator Torres Rey, members of the committee, it's a great pleasure to be here. I'm Steve Rosenstone. I'm Chancellor of Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. It may be historic for a Chancellor of MinSCU to be part of this committee's discussion. My hope is that this is not the last time I join you. I think the secret in the work we all need to be doing for Minnesota is figuring out the new and more powerful ways in which we put the pieces together to do a better job of, in this case, serving students, but also serving communities around the state. And it's been a great pleasure working this past year with Commissioner Vasilius and Director Poga Miller on this project. The pressing needs facing Minnesota are evident, and you're probably well familiar with the facts. Within 5 short years, literally 70% of all the jobs in Minnesota will require some post-secondary education. And our ability to have that workforce depends fundamentally on our ability to have more and more students better prepared than ever before to begin post-secondary education. And it depends on our ability to ensure that the students we're turning out are prepared for the jobs and careers that actually need to be done in Minnesota. So how can we do it better? How can we do it more cost-effectively? How can we deliver better outcomes for Minnesota? Well, there's pilots going on all over the state, remarkable pilots going on all over the state, and you're going to hear in much more detail following this first session about the one at Irondale High School in collaboration with Anoka Ramsey Community College. But there's pilots going on, the Bridges Career Academy up in Central Lakes. Chisago Lakes High School has a pilot of early college. I was just on the range last week at Virginia High School. Remarkable pilots going on, collaboration among the, I think, 22 high schools up on the range and the 5 community and technical colleges. And each of these pilots have a different character, which reflect the needs of those community and the needs of those schools and the desires and preferences of teachers and school systems. And our goal is not to create one model, one size fits all, and dictate from St. Paul but how we do this, but rather to create, to grease the skids, if you will, to make it easier for this to happen around the state. And the 4 points that Commissioner Casilius has referred to are indeed the steps that if we take these steps, we can make this happen. And let me just dive into a little more detail on each of these. To align assessment means that when a student passes an assessment test, he or she knows that she's prepared for college, that the assessment gives information to the student, to her family, to teachers and schools, that student is indeed college ready. And there's no surprises when she shows up in August at one of our colleges or universities. That student is ready and begins college-level work. The problem right now is that the assessments that are being used in high schools generally around the state are not giving information about college readiness. And if the assessment for high school completion is here, but the standard for college readiness is here, we're not even talking to each other. Too many students are trying to begin college but have to take remedial work to do so. We need to solve that problem, because that's very expensive for students, very expensive for the state of Minnesota. So if we can align the assessments to a single test, which works both for higher education and for high schools, we got the problem solved. We've had an assessment team working for the last 6 months to find that solution for us, a team involving both high schools, the department, and higher education, and leaders from the business community. We can bring forward an assessment that will do it for us. But more importantly, it's a suite of assessments that would begin in 8th grade, which means that when we discover a student is not on track, we have the ability to intervene earlier, not to wait until they've graduated, but intervene earlier. So secondly, we've had a team of folks from higher education and from the department working on how it is we can move that developmental education back into the high schools, with the goal being that when a student needs that extra help will indeed get students to the college-ready standard by the time they graduate. If a student is on track and is ready to go, as the commissioner said, let's let them soar. Now, that takes a couple of different forms. In many of the examples, in the Irondale example you're going to hear about, it means that the high school teachers are offering in the high school college-level courses, and the role that we play in our colleges and universities is to serve as mentors and to help ensure that, indeed, it is a college-level course. This is not about lowering the bar. It's about raising the bar of what it is we want our young people to accomplish even before they graduate high school. So that alignment team is in place. The other way in which this happens in some circumstances, not the majority of the circumstances, is that where there's a specialized need or not a critical mass in the high school, those students come to our colleges and universities and take the college-level course at one of our institutions. Particularly in technical education, though up on the range they're bringing more of that technical education back in the high schools with the help of the IRRRB and other resources. But in some cases where those resources don't exist, those students have to come to our college or university. The hurdle there that needs to be overcome is pretty simple. The formulas that exist right now do not cover the costs of us providing that college-level instruction for high school students at our colleges and universities. We are prepared to grow that program, both assist in growing concurrent enrollment in the high schools taught by high school faculty, as well as create more places in our colleges and universities for students that are prepared, and there's a modest amount of funding necessary to hold us whole and to allow us to grow. On the alignment front of the testing, a decision will have to be made about whether these are additional assessments or whether they're assessment that would replace some of the existing assessments. I understand how difficult and complicated a decision that is, but this could be cost neutral if it replaces, or a pretty small marginal cost if it's an additional assessment. Then the last point that the commissioner referred to is also crucial to the alignment, and that is we need to be working in new ways with business and industry, with high schools and our colleges and universities, to make sure that our understanding of what the workforce needs are of Minnesota are also understood in the high schools, so that more and more students can be thinking about the career pathways that match with their passions and interests, but also happen to be informed with where the high-growth industries are likely to be in our state, so we just aren't turning out more degrees and more certificates, but actually turning out graduates prepared for the work that has to be done to meet the high-demand, high-growth industries within our state. The notion of a personal plan where students can link up their interests to the interests of the growth sectors and their region of the state would be tremendous. We have some ideas for how we can do that. This would link up very much to the work that we've been doing with DEED and with the Chamber, listening around the state about what those workforce needs are, and the work that I'm following up with ITASCA to help figure out a system by which we can more systematically get an understanding of those workforce needs into our educational institutions. And we have a colleague from the Bloomington Public Schools involved in that work to help us make sure that we can convey it and communicate it in a way that would be useful at the high school level as well. These concrete steps are ready to go. These concrete steps can be taken with your help and with legislation and implemented starting this summer. Higher education is prepared to work in new ways with K-12 to get it done. We're prepared to partner in new ways. We're prepared to help high school faculty deliver the education they're capable of delivering at college-level instruction with our assistance and guidance. We're also prepared to serve those students who need to be served at our institutions. Alignment of assessment is the necessary condition for these other pieces of the plan to be in place. But we've done our homework both looking at the pilots and having these working groups ready to go and can bring forward the specifics about how each of these elements would work. So with that, I'll stop.
Thank you, Chancellor Rosenstone.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
Members, Larry Pogemiller, Director of Higher Education, Office of Higher Education. I just want to add a couple items. Chancellor Rosenstone mentioned that we know that most estimates are that 70-80% of our young people are going to need a post-secondary attainment of some sort. In addition, we know we're going into a worker shortage. It's hard for young people coming out of post-secondary right now to know this. They don't feel it. But we know from the demographer that within 4 or 5 years, we're actually going to have a shortage of people for our workforce in Minnesota. So we're going to stunt our economy if we don't figure out a way not to leave any child behind. So we don't leave children behind because we just feel good that we shouldn't do that. There's an economic imperative that almost every child is successful post-secondarily. And that starts in early childhood. And that's why you're seeing a major proposal to invest in early childhood. Higher education absolutely understands that we cannot maintain our high attainment rates in Minnesota nationally if we don't do something in early childhood. The demographics are just going to overcome us. Second point, most of what's being talked about is not new here. But I think what's different this time is you have two key leaders who institutionally understand that there's got to be a multi-layered, sustained approach to change the delivery systems that they are trying to help manage. And that's what could make the difference this time. They've already talked about the things they're going to do without investment from the legislature. There may be some policy changes you have to make on testing and so forth. But the key investment that's being asked for this time that the chancellor did not mention and should have is MNSCU proposal for internships and apprenticeships. That's going to be key to helping transition some people into the workforce in a different time frame than we're historically used to in Minnesota. Again, we've done internships and apprenticeships, but at the scale the chancellor's talking about, this is, I think, fairly this is a big deal in Minnesota at the level he's talking about. Finally, what's new here? Two things. One is we're in the development, most of the members are aware, we're in the development of a statewide longitudinal educational data system in Minnesota, as are other states, where we should be able to figure out what is going on with learners from birth to the workforce, and then feedback data to delivery systems and providers to say, here's what's working, here's what isn't working. And that should change the types of things that the delivery systems are doing. And then finally, a thing that's different is a technological advancement that has happened. Today, when we counsel students, we use things called Naviance and kind of mainframe or PC-based systems for maintaining their records and helping them plan for the workforce and for their education. We're rapidly moving to a situation where this can be on someone's personal device, their cell phone or their iPad. And we know that penetration of those devices is actually deeper than penetration of personal computers. And so with that technological shift, we should be able to go to a system where there is ownership by the learner in their education and work plan, and they can change it as necessary as they get older. Obviously, if you're a third grader, you're not going to have much ownership in your work plan. But you can put your hopes and dreams into this, and then by the time you're a sophomore or junior in high school, you will be taking more ownership in what it is you're planning academically and professionally and for your future professions. It's a summary, and again, I think the chancellor mentioned this. What is different this time around is you have a chancellor of one of our major institutions sitting here with K-12 talking to you about this. They're not fighting over who pays for post-secondary enrollment options. They care about that, but it's not the major point. The major point is these two systems have to work together to do what's in the best interest of students and to personalize the approach much sooner in their education. And don't wait until they've failed or have had trouble with the AccuPlacer test.
Thank you, Commissioner. And I also want to just second what you've just said. I think it is remarkable to have everybody literally at the table and looking at these holistically. So thank you all very much, because I know you've done a lot of work in the months and years leading up to this. So thank you. And now we'll open this up to questions. Senator Chamberlain.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank all of you again for showing up. I'm glad to see that we're talking about alignment and doing some of these things are important to streamline this stuff and meeting the needs of the students. Question I have, you mentioned, you did touch on it briefly, the assessments, a suite of assessments. That's kind of scary. We have a lot of assessments now, right? So I hope this suite of assessments replaces or reforms the assessments we have, because a lot of people think they're over-tested already. It costs a lot of money. So what are your any additional thoughts on the assessment process and how that might work and what you're thinking? Thank you.
Senator Kent, Senator Chamberlain.
Commissioner Casillas.
We have been working over the past year with an assessment task force that's been looking at those, and we'll be bringing those forward to this body as soon as called, and those recommendations. But they do recommend the replacement of the current testing system with a college and career ready assessment system beginning in 8th grade through 12th grade. They give both vocational information as well as academic information.
Thank you, Commissioner. Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, this is a tremendous trio here that we're looking at, and I'm very glad to see you all at the testifiers table today and supporting this initiative, something that I believe we all realize has been sorely needed, which is this better alignment with K-12 and higher ed. And I know we've been talking about this at least for 10 years since when I first entered the House. So I'm very glad to see this. And I certainly support the 4-point plan here particularly. I do have one question, one comment and one question. My comment has to do with the assessments, which we definitely need to get them aligned. so we know our students are ready for post-secondary and then also aligning with the workforce needs. I'll just mention visiting with a teacher just this weekend when I was home talking about assessments. And, of course, our teachers are well aware that there are a lot of assessments in our schools. And some of them provide little value to the teachers. And I just speak as a former teacher and of the many teachers I speak with, we must be very careful that we don't just add to assessments. And so I encourage you along that line. Now my question has to do with point two, which is for students who aren't on track. What is that targeted support while the students are in high school? I haven't heard much about that yet. Is that
Chancellor
Rosenstone? Senator Kent, members of the committee, as you probably know, at our colleges and universities, Minsky Colleges and Universities, we do a tremendous amount of remedial education right now, called developmental education. Roughly 40% of the students that begin at one of our colleges require some developmental education. That's a whopping number, quite frankly. And so the idea is let's take the experts we have in our colleges who are experts at developmental education and have them work collaboratively with high school teachers to be able to develop and deliver that curriculum in high school so that the developmental work, the extra help that students need to get on track and be up to the college level occurs the first time through as opposed to the second time through. So those conversations have begun, and we are prepared to partner in new ways with K-12 to assist high school teachers in doing that work. Now, the advantage there is several-fold. First, obviously, more students would then finish high school prepared to begin college. But what you need to know is that when a student right now leaves high school but has to take developmental work before they can begin college-level courses, they're doing it without help from the state grant, without help from Pell. And it's a significant investment for them to get to the starting gate. Students get discouraged. It hurts some students' ability to even begin their college education. It's a huge inefficiency for the state because some of that's being paid out of the Minsky budget and some of it's being paid out of students' pockets. So the idea is it will tremendously help the degree attainment cause that Director Pogemiller spoke about. It will help the affordability cause because there's not a dipping into one's pocket to cover that. It will help the completion cause tremendously. But essentially, it's taking that developmental work that's being done now at the college and university level and moving it back into high school.
Commissioner Caselius?
And Senator Nelson, it doesn't necessarily have to be courses either that a student would retake an entire course. It could be a skill. As you know, many times students will take these assessments, be 1-2 questions away from proficiency and showing and demonstrating that they have the knowledge. So it could be a standard-based type of skill set that they're either delivered by digital curriculum, or they could be delivered it after school, or they could be delivered it through during school. So it just depends on the student and what that diagnosis is. We think that these new assessments that we're asking for will be much more precise about what skills and what knowledge sets kids have, and we'll be able then to develop a personalized plan that Larry was talking about to actually remediate that right then and there.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Director, Commissioner, Chancellor. I also agree with the 4 points that you have in the packet, and quite frankly, I don't think anybody disagrees with the 4 points you have. But I don't have just one question. I have 1,000 questions, and you guys know that this doesn't even scratch the surface on answering the critical policy questions surrounding this issue. I've spent time with staff and preliminary meeting with MNSCU, and I have a follow-up, the University of Minnesota, my school district, and I'm working on this issue as well, and there is a myriad of policy questions that aren't easily answered surrounding what you have here. So while I agree kind of on the surface, and I think everybody would generally agree with what you're trying to do, I guess maybe I'm curious as to when you'll have a more detailed proposal, a legislative proposal. Is there something in the works in that regard?
Chancellor Rosenstein.
Senator Kent, Senator Peterson, members of the committee, my understanding from conversation with Senator Torres-Rey is that we're going to be working collaboratively with this committee and committees in the House and other committees in the Senate to jointly develop precisely those concrete proposals. So rather than us coming with a piece of paper and slipping it under the door, we want this to be a collaborative process where we work out those details together.
Senator Peterson, follow-up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, that's great. I do have one specific question, then I'll wait for this further conversation because we could be here all day. The post-secondary assessment or the assessment of readiness for post-secondary education, is the intention to have that be a minimum requirement of graduation, or is it just to help provide information to the student in the K-12 system?
Well, Senator, really, we have to take the assessment task force recommendations in the whole and debate those, because there are so many questions within that assessment. So for this piece, the college ready is for admission to college, so that those requirements that we have in this assessment would be so that they can get to the MNSCU system and be fully accepted, because that will tell them that that child is ready to take those college courses and take credit-bearing courses. So that's the intention of this. Now we have the other issue of graduation, and what do you have to do to earn a diploma in Minnesota, and does that or does that not involve exit exams? And I'm sure that will be something that will be debated at this body.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I've been thinking about this in the context of the discussion around the grad test. And I'm excited to hear that you're thinking about replacing the grad test with some other assessment, and I think that is worthwhile. One of the questions that I've had that I've struggled with is the, you know, if not a graduation test of some sort, how do you ensure that you're ready for post-secondary? And if that test is also of a post-secondary caliber, then aren't you almost doing a disservice to that other 30% of students that maybe ought to graduate from high school but are entering the workforce even in 2018 without the intention of maybe going to a liberal arts school or even getting a certification? And so where do you find that kind of middle ground is a very difficult policy question, and so I'm interested to hear what you guys think about that and as we go forward. Thanks.
Commissioner Casalius.
Senators, I think that that's the beauty of this plan, is that it really sets forth an assessment that measures both their vocational interests as well as their college interest and academic ability and aptitude, so that one, they could be going on a college pathway for a traditional 4-year or 2-year college, or they could go on a career pathway that's developed locally based on those business communities and what the local team has seen as the workforce needs in that community. And so that's the beauty, I think, in this flexible plan, and then those assessments would have that information so that if you have this 30% or so that wants to move right into career, then we can start working on those careers right away by developing career pathways. You'll hear some more about that with the Irondale group as well.
Senator Torres-Rey.
If I could just add.
Yes.
Chancellor, I think we should briefly mention what you learned in the series of 55 hearings about what employers believe they need. And I think what we're hearing, I'll do my summary, but the Chancellor has the technical way of saying this. What we hear is they think they need more liberally educated people, more than just a high school diploma, but because they need to be able to work in groups, they need to be innovative, they need to create, and they need to be able to adapt to change in the workplace. In addition, though, they need some specific skills for that particular employer. So it's a combination of both what we historically have thought as workforce-ready and liberal arts that they think the workforce needs in the future. Both of those things. I don't know if I artfully said that, Chancellor.
Chancellor.
Senator Kent, members of the committee, I'm just so pleased to hear Director Pogumiller get it just about exactly right. You know, he really is paying so careful attention to the work we've been doing. It's tremendous. It's indeed correct. Employers want the whole package. They want not just someone who can run the machine and have the technical skills, but someone who can communicate well, relate to customers, work on the team, and be part of the innovation for the next generation of technology that's going to infuse every industry in our state. Just step back for a moment. No one can be left behind. That's the point that Director Pogumiller made earlier. Everybody has to have an ambition of being prepared for the work that needs to be done. The number 70% is the number for 2018. It's not the number for 2025 or 2030 or 2040. That number is going to continue to go up. And as a state that's climatologically challenged, we need to grow our own. We can't rely on our ability, like a Colorado, to import all of its human capital. We have to grow our own. And given the demographic changes occurring in our state, we simply cannot afford to leave anyone behind. What this plan is designed to do is get more students to where they need to go to have the sustainable wages they need to live the lives they want to, that we want them to lead and they want to lead, and to allow our businesses to grow, to bring new businesses to Minnesota, and to not lose businesses because they can't find this combination of skills that they need. It's part of, if you will, the long-term human capital strategy for our state. But it's a critical step in this chain from early childhood to completion that we need to put together in more powerful ways to get the job done.
Thank you, Chancellor. Senator Torres-Ray.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think it's important, you know, Senator Peterson talks about, you know, the many questions that, you know, could possibly, we could possibly have around, you know, how do we implement this? How do we go from this concept into kind of the practical steps? And I think that's what we're trying to figure out. And the wonderful part about asking, you know, Senator Kent to help us lead that effort is that she's in the three committees. She's in finance, she's in this committee, and she's in the higher ed. And so in trying to work with Senator Bonoff and figuring out, you know, how do we pay attention to all of the pieces that are really that we need to review here, is very important that we pay attention to that. But I think my question is about, really, Commissioner, about the pieces that we need to do in the K-12 system. So as I review this, the alignment is kind of the number one. We're not going to be able to do everything in the first year. So we have to kind of take pieces and assume responsibility for the pieces that we have. It's under the jurisdiction of this committee. So the alignment is one, and we're going to be working towards, you know, putting together recommendations, and committee members will be participating in that. But I am curious about the internships, because I think that we have an opportunity. Director Pogumiller was part of a conversation we had several months ago with in the Latino community. The governor invited a group of leaders to talk about being more proactive and figuring out how do we address graduation rates in the Latino community and how do we prepare immigrant kids and Latino kids to be prepared to go into the workforce and have the skills that are necessary in the market here today. During that conversation, the concept of the internship was very, very important, and people felt that we had to open more opportunities for internships for high school students to really be part of the workforce, the labor force kind of entities where, you know, we have state agencies, counties, cities, private sector offering, so that they understand what it means in eighth grade. You know, what is that I really want to do? Do I really want to be studying, you know, going into forestry, which never crossed my mind that DNR is going to have a lot of opportunities for work? Is that the internship we're talking about? Because that's something that we need to talk about in terms of how do we inspire a kid, how do we educate parents, how do we work with counselors to help us move kids in the direction that we want? Because we can have a perfect system, but if we don't have the elements, if we don't have parents paying attention, if we don't have the kids kind of figuring out where they want to go, if we don't have counselors, could you address those issues that are kind of the responsibility of the K-12?
Sure. Senators?
Yeah. Commissioner?
I will talk about some of the policy issues that I see right before us and trying to make that happen in K-12, and then I'll ask Larry to talk about the internships and apprenticeships that we can do and sharing with our business community and business partners. So first, I think you're right. The assessment is a big piece of it, and getting that alignment right, that's big work. But also course requirements is another big piece in terms of graduation course requirements. Do we still want to require the exact same course requirements for every single student? Is there value in that? There may be, there may not, but I think that we need to discuss that. There's something called Carnegie units, and that's the amount of time that kids spend in classes. So there's course taking and there's Carnegie units. You want to look at that in terms of graduation requirements. We have something called a rigorous course waiver that allows for students to opt out of standards in order to take rigorous courses at the college level. There's opportunity within that legislation to have students do career pathways. We could look at our career technical ed language, PSEO rules and who's in and who's out of options and eligibility for PSEO. On the higher ed side, there's admissions work that needs to be done. We have a huge bill with extended time and dollars that are going into extended time for kids who are needing credit recovery or extra help or after school course makeup, and there's opportunity within extended time legislation. And then we've recently passed innovation zone legislation and giving more authority and autonomy to the Irondales or the Virginia high schools or other, Ramsey Community College and others to do these innovation. What does it mean to be able to do innovation? So there's opportunity within the innovation. Personalized learning is another place. Digital learning is another place. Teacher licensure, who is a teacher? If I want to take a forestry class, can I take a forestry class from a forester and do that somehow online? So I think as we begin to think about what the future of high school looks like, content is available now on our smartphones. And so we can no longer package that in a textbook. We can no longer have teachers be the only deliverer of content. It's really how do we embrace knowledge being everywhere and the access being everywhere for everyone, and then how do we ask kids to use knowledge, analyze it, apply it, problem solve with it, and that's what our businesses are saying they want in a worker. And so I'll turn it over and then let Chancellor Rosenstone talk a little bit about the apprenticeships and internships that he's been talking to business community about.
Okay, thank you, Commissioner. Chancellor?
Senator Torres-Rey, one point first. We are not going to be in a position to continue to grow PSEO, either the concurrent enrollment model of us assisting that instruction in the high school, or in the case of a student coming to our college and university, given the underfunding that currently exists for that program. And so in addition to being held whole with respect to that, if we want to grow it, we're going to have to come up with a funding strategy through your K-12 budget by which those costs are covered. And right now they're not being covered, and so you can't make it up on volume if you're not getting the base costs covered, and we want to be able to grow that program, but we'll need some help to do it. With respect to the apprenticeships and internships, it's something, Senator Torres-Rey, that you'll hear more about next week in the Higher Education Committee, because it's one of the key elements of our proposal and our priorities for the next biennium. But we've thought about it for our college and university students. It's not part of the proposal that we've thought about that we're sharing with you today. The idea is very simple. We heard loud and clear from employers around the state in just about every single sector of industry around the state that they want more graduates with hands-on experience. Hands-on experience can be achieved through internships and apprenticeships, It does several things in addition to giving the hands-on experience. If we fund it right, it's helping on the affordability for students. And by the way, it's building a relationship in people's home community with business and industries that's searching for talented workers to keep people in the community in which they were educated to help the vitality of communities around the state of Minnesota. We'd be happy as part of the discussion to have an additional discussion about whether that's a component we want to build in to what happens in high schools. It's not part of the plan that we've currently thought about. It is part of what we've thought about the higher education level that we'll talk about next week.
Thank you, Chancellor. And I just want to be mindful of the time. We've got a full agenda, and so let's all just try to keep it a little brief if we possibly can. Senator Wieger, did you have a question?
Madam Chair, in deference to the other presentations, I'll defer.
Okay, thank you. Senator Nino?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a comment and maybe a request to you and the members here. Last year, when I had a town hall meeting in Cambridge, Cambridge has a Minsky facility in about a mile and a half away from the high school. And one of the comments, suggestions, whatever you want to call it, that came from a gentleman from the school district was that they run into barriers in being able to work together with the community college there. Some of it has to do with collective bargaining stuff. And some of it, I'm sure, has to do with funding, who's going to pay for this and that and the other thing. But it was clear that there were opportunities there. And again, some of it might be collective bargaining, but there certainly were opportunities either in policy changes or legislative changes to free that up. And as your group is looking at this and as you're having this discussion, maybe you've heard that already in the meetings that you've had, but I just want to make that comment and put that on the table so that that's part of the discussion when you're working on this.
Thank you. Good point. Senator Peterson and then Senator Thompson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just so we kind of know what we're working towards here, and I'm sure you guys have figured out what these numbers are, we've mentioned we need a 150,000 more completions by 2018. Is that correct? How many more entrants do we need, and at what graduation rate do we need to sustain to hit that metric that we're after?
Chancellor Rosenstone?
Senator Kent, members of the committee, I can't do that math in my head, but we can do the math for you. We will fall short. Let me just back up. There are 620,000 replacements that have to occur as a result of the baby boom cohort retiring and as a result of the job growth that we anticipate in the state of Minnesota. The current path we're on will leave us about 150,000 short. So part of it is improving completion, and we'll be talking about that next week as well in the Higher Education Committee. And part of it is expanding the pipeline so that more students are coming in. If more students come in academically prepared, it will increase dramatically our ability to produce the completion. Without a strategy to grow the pipeline and improve completion, we will not get there as a state.
Yeah, and that, Madam Chair, that was not a gotcha question. I just sincerely, I think it's a good kind of figured out
to know. Yeah, way to think about it.
Thank you. Senator Thompson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just one comment and a question for the Chancellor, if I may. This may sound odd coming from me, being a very pro-business legislator. I become very concerned when industry has too much influence on our educational system. And the reason I do is because they have very different objectives. They have profit objectives. They have growing business objectives. They have cutting costs objectives. All of those things are very good in the area of business. They have an interest in getting people out of school that can do work in their particular industry as quickly as possible with them incurring as little of the cost as possible. That's a fine way to run a business, but it's not a fine way to run an education system, and that concerns me. So my question for the Chancellor is, if I give you 1,000 children, I guess by the time they get to you, they're adults, young adults, all of whom can read, write, and do arithmetic at grade level, is there anything in your school system that they can't accomplish?
Thank you, Senator Thompson. Chancellor Rosenstone.
Senator Kent, Senator Thompson, wonderful question. They can soar as high as their dreams can take them, and we will be there to help them succeed. With respect to the influence of business, I'm not suggesting that we invite business industry in to run our colleges or universities. What I'm suggesting is that we listen and that we learn from them what it is the capabilities of our graduates should be. There was a survey that UCLA did this last fall. They do it every fall nationally of all the freshmen around the country. And the question was, what's the number one reason that you're going to college? And the number one reason, whether it's a two-year institution or a four-year university, number one reason that students are going to college, 85% say, you get a job. And I think we have a responsibility to help prepare them for the life that they're coming to us to help them prepare for. Now, as Director Pogemiller pointed out, and as we learned in the workforce listening session, it's not just prepared to do the job of today. It's not just prepared to run the machine. It's a broad and deep set of skills: thinking, being creative, being able to communicate, being able to innovate, being able to work in teams that go beyond just what might be thought of as kind of a mechanical process of running a particular machine. Business needs to be our partners in getting it done. Business has to help pay for some of the things we need to do. So the conversation I'll be having with the Higher Education Committee next week will propose that if we get support for our internship program, that business match dollar for dollar the state support, because there's a benefit to business from that program and a benefit to our students and the state. We're also very concerned about the state-of-the-art equipment that students need to be trained on, so they're prepared for the work that needs to be done. And if we get support from the state of Minnesota for that, I'm going to propose that business match that dollar for dollar, because I want them to have some skin in the game, and I think they get some benefit, just as our students and communities around the state will get some benefit as well. So while I agree with you, we don't want business running our colleges and universities. I think there has to be a partnership where we're working hand in glove to get done what needs to be done for communities to be vital, for people to get work, and for our communities and state to continue to grow.
Senator Thompson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to follow up, certainly I understand the idea that we want people to go to college with the objective of becoming gainfully employed and taking care of themselves. Being a parent who's writing a check for one student now and will be for 2 years, about a year and a half, I'm all for that. Again, I certainly am sensitive to the idea that we want to train up the workforce. I guess the thing, when I start hearing about we need to be thinking about what three-year-olds are going to do for a living, it kind of makes my skin crawl, to be honest with you, or even eighth graders. My belief is that children should go through school, become young adults, and graduate with a fine liberal arts education. That means a basic understanding of all of the things that we grew up learning. History, psychology, a little bit. Obviously, you learn most of that on the playground in high school, elementary school. Reading, writing, and arithmetic, and all of those things. I'm prepared to let business bear the cost of a lot of the other kinds of things that people have to learn. Not to say there shouldn't be internships. There should be. There should be job shadowing. There should be exposure to all those kinds of things. I'm just saying I want the education professionals running our educational institutions, not the business professionals. And I think that's very important to our independence. It's, you know, and again, as about as pro-business a legislator as exists at this Capitol, it makes me nervous when they get their foot into the education system.
A helpful observation, Senator Thompson. Thank you. And with that, we will conclude this portion of today's agenda. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And we will move on to the adult basic education overview. Our presenter today is Tom, Citrin Hysum? Hysum? Okay. with Literacy Action Network.
Senator Kent, Senator Torres Ray, committee members, I'm really pleased to be here today. My name is Tom Citrin Hysum, and I represent the Literacy Action Network, which is a statewide professional association advocating for the interests of our adult basic education learners and programming. And I think it's particularly appropriate that I was asked to appear here following the previous presentation, which has a lot of really interesting ideas in it. And one of the things that I want to talk a little bit about is to make sure that our learners, who are slightly different than many of the learners that they're talking about, get included in the planning as we figure out ways in which we can boost people's academic and occupational skills and their ability to earn a living and support their families. So What I'd like to do today is three things. Is talk, just give a very brief overview of adult basic education, or ABE. Some of you I know are very familiar with it. Others of you probably don't know a whole lot about it. We talk a little bit about what we are already doing in terms of occupational preparation and skill building in our learners. And then finally, a few ideas about how we could hopefully align the needs of our learners with some of the proposals that are being brought forward so that a larger pool of people can benefit from it. So in terms of what ABE is, we provide a variety of literacy and basic skills education for low-skilled adults. Our focus is on helping them become self-sufficient economically and function effectively in the community as parents, as citizens, and so on. We have two primary audiences. The first are what we call new Americans, who are refugees and immigrants from other countries. And the second are people who are native-born Americans but probably dropped out of high school for various reasons somewhere along the line and are really stuck either unemployed or in very low-wage jobs without much of a future. And those really make up quite a large number, unfortunately, of Minnesotans. We have about 3.3 million working-age adults in the state. 60% of those have not completed a college degree, completed college. Over 250,000 have not completed high school. And we have close to a million, about 892, who have completed high school, have not ever entered college. 8,800 and about 61,000 or more that speak little or no English. And then over 346,000 people who earn less than a living wage, which is twice the federal poverty level. So we have really, sadly, a really significant number of Minnesotans who are not in a traditional high school situation, that are older than that. They haven't necessarily completed high school successfully, and they're not in the pipeline for any sort of meaningful attainment in life. And we feel that the needs of those learners are really key for a number of reasons. It's morally the right thing to do. It's key to the future of our state and our meeting our employment needs in the future that you've already heard about. And so we think that what we do is really crucial in preparing and helping low-skilled Minnesota adults prepare to help meet Minnesota's future labor force needs. We're the only statewide educational program that focuses on meeting the educational and occupational prep needs of low-skilled Minnesotans. Last year, just a few quick stats before your eyes glaze over, we served a little over 73,000 adults last year. About a little over a third of those were English language learners. Over a third were basic skills. The rest of them were working on their the upper levels of GED, adult diploma, and active workforce job skill programming. We're funded largely by the state with some federal money also in the mix. A little bit about our outcomes. We're really proud of what we're able to do with the resources we have. We've met our federally established guidelines and outcomes more than any other state in the U.S., which we feel really very positive about. We worked very hard on that. We've received, Minnesota has received WIA incentive grants in recognition of the outstanding achievements both of ABE and our workforce partners. More than any other state. The last round of WIA incentive grants, we were one of only three states that was selected for those grants. And that money has allowed us, a lot of that funding, it's about, I'm not sure exactly how much, I think about $1 million extra, has gone into the development of fast track and related career pathways programming. So we're well aware of where we need to go and what we need to do for our learners. And then we've had a steady increase in the achievement levels of our learners over the last 10 years. 10 years ago, only 21% completed what's called an educational level, which is how the federal government measures what we do. Last year, it had risen to 48%. And we've worked as a field doing a lot of professional development, creatively using the funding which the legislature has so generously given us to try to figure out how can we help our learners achieve more and more quickly. Some of the major trends in ABE, and most have to do with career pathways and job preparation. We've achieved greater intensity of service and greater persistence of learners, both of which are tied to helping to get better outcomes. If we can keep our learners till they actually learn something significant, they're far more likely to be successful later on. We've been doing a lot of collaboration with DEED, Workforce Centers, and MNSCU on Fast Track and other career programming, developing career pathways, and then a lot of work in terms of professional development in the last few years, increasing distance learning as an adjunct to what we already do so we can serve our learners more intensively and do outreach better to more people. A couple of words about why, and I think you probably know this, but why workforce development is so important. A 2010 study found that there's a gap of nearly 30% between the educational preparation and skill level of the current workforce and the expected level of preparation that will be needed just a very few years from now in 2018. And there just, simply put, are not enough younger workers entering the workforce to meet these needs. So many of the people that need to fill these jobs are already in the workforce. Many of them are our learners, and they need to be further trained and retrained so that they can fill those jobs that will become available as our generations, other generations retire. So I think I just like to mention that I think meeting the transitions needs of our learners is just as important as meeting the transition needs of K-12. They're both really important, and we just want to make sure that we're at the table, we're part of the discussion, so that the large numbers of Minnesotans that we represent don't get left behind. But there are some things about our learners that are very different than young people who go straight from high school into college. They're older than traditional college students. Most of them face multiple barriers, multi-generational poverty, limited English in many cases, children, family responsibilities, transportation and child care needs, a whole bunch of things that most high school students just going into college don't have to deal with, hopefully at any rate. Sometimes they do. And then too often when they do get into college, as mentioned by our previous speaker, they become mired in developmental ed classes. And our learners hopefully don't if they've gone through AB programs, but so many of these low-income, low-skilled people, that's where they end up. So our learners have really complex lives and really complex needs, and meeting those needs is really essential if we're going to help them work towards self-sufficiency and get the education that they need to be successfully employed and support their families. So I think the needs of our learners really mirror from an adult perspective many of the plans that are being proposed already for the K-12 into MNSCU pipeline. One of the things that, just a very few ideas that we'd like to offer, we've met with a number of you already to talk about establishing a statewide adult diploma, which would serve as an alternative to the GED as a way for all of our low-skilled adults around the state to be able to earn a diploma that was meaningful and significant and available statewide. And hopefully we'll be introducing some legislation in the near future about that. We want to make sure that ABE assessment and instruction align with measures of readiness for post-secondary education. And also want to make a point that our learners are not necessarily going to all go through and earn a four-year degree. But they do have higher education needs. Often that's shorter-term certificate programs or other ways in which they can, in a relatively short period of time, get the skills they need to be employed. And we want to make sure that the way that we're assessing our learners aligns with the way these MNSCU institutions are asking that learners be assessed so they can make that transition easily. We want to make sure that our adult educational plans are aligned with workforce needs. We need ways of better informing students about career options, market needs. We've already made some progress along those lines in working with DEED. And we would like to implement personalized student education and work plans for all of our learners so that from the first time one of our adults starts classes, they have a plan in mind. And we help them develop a plan so they're not just kind of aimlessly drifting but have a real goal and have the tools in place so they can start working towards those goals. And, of course, we don't have any particular funding requests related to these things right now, but there needs to be adequate funding always to support the things that we're asking our staff and our students to be able to accomplish. So that's just a very brief capsule outline of some of the things that we hope that you'll take into consideration as you consider some of the bills that I think will be coming forth.
Thank you, Mr. Sitram-Heisen. Members, any questions at this point? Very helpful message. Thank you very much.
And
timely. Thanks. At this point, I would like to turn the chair over to Senator Rood to discuss implementation. Thank you.
Members, I'd like to thank Senator Torres Ray for this opportunity. I really look forward to working with Senator Kent on what I consider to be one of the most exciting conversations happening at the Capitol today. So with that, most of you know Chancellor Rosenstuhl mentioned the Bridges program at Central Lakes College. It's a very wonderful, innovative program. So today I really look forward to hearing from Irondale and their high school. So thank you for coming today. We look forward to your presentation. If I could remind presenters to please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Dan Hooverman, Superintendent of the Mountain View Schools.
Welcome.
Thank you. And I'd like to introduce who's joining me at the table today. On the far left is Amy Alvarez. She's one of the Dean of Students at Irondale High School. To my immediate left is Rich Rosevac, who works as a teacher leader at the building. To my immediate right is Mike Werner, who's Director of Development at Anoka Ramsey Community College. And to my far right is Scott Gangler, Principal of Irondale High School. And what I wanted to begin with, if I may, is to provide a bit of context for, and I should also say we really appreciate the opportunity to be here, but I wanted to provide a little bit of context for this, and it ties in very closely with what you heard from Chancellor Rosenstone, Commissioner Caselius, and Director Pogemiller. We had worked closely with all of their offices in the development of the work that we're doing at Irondale. And I can't say enough about the support we received from Anoka Ramsey Community College, from Interim President Stumpf, and also from Michael Werner and the rest of the staff there. So it truly was a team effort.
Thank you.
Would you like me to proceed?
Yes, please.
Okay. The issue that I wanted to emphasize initially is the fact that a lot of the work that we've been doing has been in development for a number of years. We were one of the first districts in the state to qualify for the QCOM program, and that was a very important foundational piece for the work that we're doing now. It set the stage through the use of teacher leadership, a lot of the collaboration amongst our staff, a lot of the focus on how students were performing, the data that needed to be analyzed in terms of looking at changes that we needed to make within our program. It also set the tone for a true commitment in our district for shared leadership between the school board, to administration, to teacher leaders at all of our sites. It's a very important component. About 6-7 years ago, we began the shift to a dean model in our high schools and middle schools. And what that allowed us to do was to lower the ratio of students to dean to about 225-1. That's an essential part of the work that's being done now. And then I can't emphasize enough how important it has been for us to blend funding streams. So whether we're talking about district professional development funds, whether we're talking about QCOMP, whether we're talking about integration dollars, compensatory dollars, all of that has been very, very important in making this work. The reason I want to again emphasize that is because we really didn't have new money to do this. The work that we're doing was done with those existing funding sources, that it was tied into a lot of the issues which I've laid out, which we have been working on over the last 6, 7, 8 years. So this wasn't about a grant for us. This wasn't about a new funding mechanism. It was using what was already available to us. So with that said, the pre-K-14 design, what we were really interested in is looking at the middle. The kids who are in that middle 50-60%. We're very proud of the programs that we've offered in Mountain View over the years. Students in our top 20-25% have done well. We predict they're always going to do well. Well, where we had a concern where that was that next layer of student, the kids in the middle, very capable kids, kids that are graduating, They're doing all the things that we were asking them to do, but there were disconnects. And I think Chancellor Rosenstone, Commissioner Caselius referred to that. Whether these kids were, many of them were beginning programs. There were a lot of questions about how many of them were completing programs. So our focus was on that group of students. In our system, there's an increasing representation in that middle of students from families that are economically challenged. We're seeing increasing numbers of students of color in that middle population. And we wanted to find a way to address their needs in a more complete fashion. In a couple of minutes, you'll see a slide relating to our equity promise. In our system, what that equity promise represents is that race, class, or mild, moderate disability will not predict a student's success. In order for that to be a truthful statement, we needed to address the middle. So that was really, really the leverage point that we were focused on. For gaps, we've talked a lot about the achievement gap. We believe there are three others that contribute to it in a significant way. One is the opportunity gap. Because of some of the social economic issues which I've referenced, whether it be looking at students who are coming to us from other countries, whole host of reasons, there are opportunity gaps. An example of what we've done to address that is that in our system, beginning 2 years ago, we pay for every junior to take the ACT at our expense. The reason we did that was we didn't want to leave it to chance. That began with a grant from our District Educational Foundation. As that grant is reduced in terms of what they'll be, how they'll be supporting us, our intention is to cover that cost ourselves. Just as a point of clarification, the College Board says if you pay for one, you pay for all. So it isn't something that can be put on a sliding scale. Our choice was to pay for all. We believe that there's an expectations gap. A significant part of that is on us, that as a district and our entire staff, we have to make sure that we're recognizing what kids are capable of doing and that we sincerely believe that all of our students can be successful. We can prepare them so that they can compete when they leave us. The aspirational gap, we've begun very early in our elementary schools, explaining to parents, explaining to kids how important it is, the work that they're doing at that age, to prepare them to be successful when they're going to be enrolling in more rigorous concurrent college courses at the high school level. If we wait till 8th grade, 7th grade, it's too late. The high schools can't catch kids up if they display deficits, if they're too far behind to benefit and be successful in those courses. So we do start in the elementary school, setting targets for kids, growth targets in math and reading. A couple of our elementary schools are sponsoring college fairs in which colleges will be there. And what we're trying to do is not dictate or not try and target kids to a certain profession, to a certain school. We want them to be thinking about how important the work that they're doing in elementary school, to middle school, to high school is for their future. We feel that if we impact the opportunity gap, expectations gap, and aspirational gap, that we'll have a much better chance of addressing the achievement gap. I will, and here's the slide on the equity promise again, and then I'll turn it over to one of my colleagues to talk about the 10 keys.
My name is, again, is Scott Gingler, principal at Irondale High School, and I'm going to speak to what exactly early college would look like. As Dan mentioned, it's a part of a bigger piece of district initiative. It's the high school portion of a P14 pathway to post-secondary success. This slide speaks to the 10 key steps that we feel are necessary for students to obtain a level of readiness to enter post-secondary successfully. So as you go through those steps, you'll see when we get to step 8, 9, 10, there are different readiness levels that students will enter post-secondary, their post-secondary experience. Simply put, an early college high school is creating opportunities and pathways so all students have equal access to post-secondary preparation, college-level rigor. We do this by uniquely blending grades 9 through 14 coursework and by developing four-year plans that meet the needs and interests of every student. To do this, we've created different partnerships with local colleges and universities. We've opened the college access door to more students. Pathways are determined depending on students' individual needs, growth targets, and personalized learning plans. Again, we strategically blended high school and college-level coursework. We've constructed clear curricular pathways aligned to the Minnesota Transfer Curriculum and to an Associate of Arts degree. Enhanced the opportunities already in place for our higher performing students, and we've targeted our students in the academic middle with a strategic focus on underrepresented populations, including students qualifying for free and reduced lunch and students who are the first in their family to attend college. And finally, we provided significant future tuition savings for our students and our families. Most importantly, a comprehensive early college recognizes that students have varying college and career interests, and not all students share the same readiness levels, whether that's academic readiness, social-emotional readiness, or financial readiness. As a result, we've designed our program so all students, regardless of their post-secondary plan, will have access to the necessary preparation and programming that will increase their likelihood of success beyond high school. And for most of our students, that will mean college completion.
Hi, my name is Amy Alvarez. I'm a dean of students at Irondale High School, and I've been in this role in the Moundsview District for 4 years now. The dean model we went to about 6 years ago, and it's a blending, is how I like to explain it, between an assistant principal position and a school counselor position. So in a traditional model, you have an assistant principal who does some discipline with students, and you have your school counselor who does the community referrals, scheduling, teacher conflict, as it may be. As a dean, I have a caseload of about 240 students, and I serve the end of the alphabet at Irondale High School, starting in SNU through Z. And of my students, I work with them all 4 years. And as a dean, I am the go-to for whatever it is that may come up in their educational career with us. So if they miss their bus, if there's an issue on the bus, if they need a schedule change, if they're interested in the military, if they're interested in 2 4-year colleges, how to get there, how to pay for it, I am who they go to the first time out. I can refer them to the community. I can refer them to mental health services that we have available on campus. In my role as a dean, we look at planning for their 4 years at Irondale High School. And it's really shifted from when I was a classroom teacher. And we looked at the, at least I did, I looked at the goal of high school to graduate, get that diploma, check those boxes, meet those requirements. And we've really changed that mindset here to plan for your 4 years here in a way that we look at the goal being, are we preparing you for whatever it is you want to do after high school? Don't sit here and take your requirements and look at it in such a small way, but where do you want to go? And so we have these meetings with every single student and their parents one-on-one. And we use Naviance, which Commissioner Pogumilla referenced. And our students actually do get on their phone and check their Naviance account. And in that account, we build a 4-year plan. And we sit down with them as ninth graders, put together their choices, their courses, challenge them along the way to take something they probably wouldn't have taken, like an AP or a college-level course. And then in the early college program, we definitely walk them through what that's going to look like, how that will work, how we will support them, and what their goal is, whether it's the 2-year Associate of the Arts degree or the Minnesota Transfer Curriculum. I'm going to turn it over to Rich.
Thank you.
Senator, my name is Rich Rosevac. I'm a national board certified teacher, and I have the luxury of being the instructional strategies facilitator at Irondale High School. I also work directly with the students in the early college program. I wanted to talk a little bit about how we got to the place we did as a staff and as a community, and to start thinking a little bit about professional development. For us, one important step in our professional development was participation in the Ramp Up to Readiness program, which is under the umbrella of the University of Minnesota's College Readiness Consortium. And I've actually just come from a meeting of the Ramp Up schools today, and I can tell you there are a lot of other schools around the state of Minnesota that are engaging in this kind of work, and it's very exciting to be a part of that. I wanted to say that what that did for us is it provided us with a clear set of goals around four-year planning that helped the whole staff recognize its role in preparing students for post-secondary success. In a nutshell, it changed the conversation that we have from being, if you go to college, to no matter what kind of college you go to, these are the skills that will be useful for you. Another key piece of our professional development was teacher participation in the AP Summer Institutes, which were funded through a legislative authorization. What that enabled us to do was to have our teachers develop a much stronger understanding of what college-level rigor was and to develop the skill set they needed in order to provide access to a broader range of students. Another critical contribution for us is how we use our data. For us, data is used to inform our instruction regularly. It's something that enables us to understand where our students are now and to move them forward. And that's been a critically important part of our QComp program. So when Superintendent Hooverman was talking about QComp, that's also been really critical for us in understanding goal setting and in understanding how to use data to inform instruction and to help prepare our students for the next level. I wanted to say that today I really honestly believe that Irondale is a place where teachers are empowered to innovate, and that continuous improvement is not just a slogan. It is honestly a way of life for us. To Senator Nelson's point earlier about some of the support systems that we have in place, how do we make this a reality? And also what Chancellor Rosenstone was talking about, we've taken a lot of the remedial work and we've pushed that down into 9th and 10th grade. So what we have there to support our students in the middle are foundational courses in math, reading, and writing. The math foundation course is tied to student success in algebra, which is one of the keys to our post-secondary success that Principal Gengler was referring to. So one of those steps along the way is a C in algebra. And we realize that's a critical point, tipping point, for students about whether or not they're going to be successful when they get to college. So what we do is we actually will pre-test students, we'll identify where their particular needs are, and then we'll develop an individual program for them using resources like Khan Academy or lessons in class and additional support in that 9th grade foundations class. And we're beginning to see some excellent results from that just in 6 months that we've been working on it. We've also created a variety of support structures for students outside the school day, including ACT and AP prep classes, and social supports for students from underrepresented groups. To ensure that our students have access to these interventions, we've also made a commitment to extending the hours of our library and providing transportation for our students who want to stay late. The last thing I want to share you about was my own 9th grade college seminar. Over the years, we've had an increasing awareness of the importance of certain habits of mind for students to be successful. These are many of the skills that the director and the chancellor were referring to. Things like persisting or managing your impulsivity or working together. I could talk about many of these things, but I want to highlight just one, and that's the role of organization. For years and years, we've provided students with planners. We might teach a one-off class in the afternoon after school. We might have a resource hour where we try to provide students with some support in terms of organization. But it never became a habit for these students. When the class was over, when the semester was done and they moved on to a new teacher, they hadn't acquired that habit, and it wasn't enabling them to persist and to stick with it. This year in my 9th grade seminar, I have the opportunity to work with students on these skills repeatedly to really develop them, to make sure that they become a habit for those students. When I talk about organization, I really want to highlight what that means. I had a student last semester, wonderful young lady, who just sat there and she stared at a pile of papers. She really, really wanted this, but she had no idea how to get it. We worked with her. We found her some organization system. For her, that was a tipping point. Instead of losing papers and losing assignments and finding herself a C student and deciding in the first semester of her freshman year that's who she was, she got organized, she got A's and B's, she's optimistic, she has a goal. This is still very difficult work, and one of the greatest challenges that we face continues to be poverty. For many students who want to be organized, they would give me a plan, and they would say, I'll be able to do this. My parents will buy me the folders. Next week, I check back. Where are your folders? My parents will get them next week. Third week, where are your folders? We couldn't afford it. Senators, I have been buying a lot of folders. But to really close all of these gaps, to really make the promise that we have in that equity promise reality for everybody, we absolutely need the work of our partners in higher education, because we can do all we can to prepare them, but without a partner, without being able to close the deal to say to students, you have a realistic opportunity to complete your college education, it would be for naught. And that's where our partner, Anoka Ramsey, is so important.
Thank you. Good afternoon. My name is Michael Warner. I am the Director of Program Development at Anoka Ramsey Community College. Thank you for the opportunity to come
Welcome.
In this afternoon. We are very pleased to be working with Irondale High School to create an early college model. Our program serves 14 partner high schools throughout central Minnesota and the northern suburbs of Minneapolis and St. Paul. Our concurrent enrollment program abides by all MNSCU, Anoka Ramsey Community College, and the National Alliance of Concurrent Enrollment Partnerships standards, policies, and procedures. One of the things that's a highlight of our program is that each high school partner teacher works with an Anoka Ramsey Community College faculty mentor in each of the courses that are taught in all of our high schools. This relationship makes sure that there is an approved syllabus, all the assignments are reviewed by the high school and the faculty mentor to make sure that college rigor is established in each of the courses. To echo some of the comments Chancellor Rosenstone made earlier to this afternoon to all of you, that this is by no means a different set of standards in place in the high school as it is in college. Each of the students in the high schools that are participating in our program are taking in a course that is equivalent, if not equal, to what is being taught in our classrooms in both Cambridge and Coon Rapids. And also along with those, we have in-class observations and an ongoing relationship that's established between our high school partner teacher and the faculty mentor. Some of these are going on for upwards of 8-10 years now, and both of them are an opportunity to share ideas, share resources, and share materials. And often, materials presented in a high school classroom will be turned around and adapted into a syllabus for use in a college classroom by a faculty mentor. For our program work with Irondale High School, all the students adhere to the MNSCU and PSEO requirements for taking concurrent enrollment program courses at Irondale High School. And we've adapted a unique curriculum based on AP course offerings already established at the high school to meet some of the other needs and the gaps in the transfer curriculum as well as in our AA curriculum, and have used concurrent enrollment courses to fill those gaps in order to help students complete the E40 credit, a Minnesota transfer curriculum, or the 60-credit AA degree. And then since all of the students are enrolled students at Anoka Ramsey Community College and they get transcripted credit through Anoka Ramsey Community College, these credits will transfer to any of the four-year state universities and a variety in almost all out-of-state and in-state public and private institutions. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there questions from members? Senator Johnson.
Madam Chair, and whoever on the panel that might want to address this question that I have, you've placed a lot of emphasis on the ACT, and I'm very happy. My daughter is, my grandson is in, goes to Mountview School, and she told me about that program, and I was impressed with it. What I'm asking now is the ACT test, would that qualify as to say that you would not have to do remedial work when you go to college?
There are thresholds, Senator, that students would need to reach on the ACT. and those thresholds determine at the two-year and four-year institutions whether or not they would require any remediation.
So if they met that score, like 29 or whatever it might be,
yes.
They would not be subject to have remedial?
No, I think some of those thresholds, some of the policy questions around that are still being discussed, I believe, with Director Pogemiller in the Office of Higher Ed. I'm not privy right now to where all of that stands, but the issue was to try and translate that to get away from reliance on the ACCUPLACER.
Senator Torres Ray.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Superintendent, I am curious about what do you need from us? It seems like you're doing tremendous work. You have been able to rearrange your accounting system so that you pay for all of this. You've been able to recruit amazing people, obviously, that want to do this with you and that you're moving forward. What are the pieces that are, I know you've been working with, the administration, you've been working with the chancellor. What are the recommendations that you have for this committee? Clearly, you know, we're going to be reviewing some of the recommendations for the alignment, and assessments. Clearly, we want to review, I am very curious, Ms. Alvarez, too, about how do you counsel 240 students and, really figure out that some of them don't even have folders while you're dealing with, kids that have ACT scores that are so high you don't need to do anything for them, but others that don't have any of these habits that you want to develop. So how do you? So I'm curious about both. How can we get a grasp of the legislative changes that need to be made in terms of adding resources, changing policies, and then the very practical effort that we need to do? I do believe that we need to increase funding for counselors, but I don't know.
Well, I anticipated that question, and there are two or three different, approaches I would take with that. From a financial approach, and this may sound a little different, but I think early college begins with early childhood. And I believe that whether we're talking all-day funding for all-day kindergarten, or I know some of the debate that's going on regarding other early childhood funding is really critical. What we have tried to do within our system is realign from elementary to middle to high school. In doing that, I think that continuing commitment to fund programs like QComp, to fund in some shape or form the integration rule, if the rule is going to be rewritten, whatever the circumstances might be around the policy questions. The resources associated with that are very important. I think the dollars that exist in the compensatory formula are very important. So what we've been able to do is to, again, blend or braid those funds together to support this effort. Any of those funds which would be removed not only would impact this effort, but they would impact a lot of other things that we're doing. So that's really, really important. I think from a policy perspective, I think an ongoing, and I think that speaks to the work of Commissioner Casalius and Chancellor Rosenstone, to make sure that there are not hidden barriers, within existing legislation. I mean, we don't believe we violated anything, but it maybe could be more clear in some areas, whether that's under PSEO or some of the other related regulations. But right now, quite honestly, we're not asking for anything other than maintain for sure what's in existence. More would be helpful. In terms of funding, however, that isn't a requirement that we're seeing right now.
Senator, at risk of sounding cliche, I approach my job by looking at the whole child. And I know we've heard that term many times, but as a dean and with all the differences in my students that you're referencing, I can't approach my job as a task. And I have to look at the whole child in anticipation of what might come, of looking at their background, where they did come from. I don't necessarily have a straightforward answer other than I look back at my work as a science teacher and an ELL teacher, and I draw from knowing adolescents very well. And I use that. I work as a team. I rely on the other 8 deans in the office. So we have a chemical dependency counselor who is a dean. We have 2 licensed school counselors as deans. We have a social worker who is a dean. We have 2 special education, 3 special education licensed deans. And we operate as a team. And I couldn't do it without having that resource right outside the door of my office. And you just take it as it comes.
Thank you.
And if I can add, I'm sorry to interrupt there, just a moment. With some of the other kinds of supports that we have are located outside the dean's office. So we have cultural liaisons that the district employs, which are very, very helpful for us to ensure that 4-year planning meetings with parents and family members are being done in a way that's respectful and understanding the needs of everyone. Some of the more structured supports, we might call them tier 3 interventions, or other things where we have individuals like a dean of equity services for the district who works closely with students to help support those. So it's really about finding the right level of support for each student within the system that we have. And it's something we're constantly trying to get better at.
Mr. Gingler, did you have a comment? Senator Torres-Ray.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just have a follow-up. I don't believe that we received a profile of your school program. I don't have information about your statistics. You know, who are your kids in terms of, you know, ethnicity, race, income. It would be very helpful if we could get that.
Sure.
Thank you.
Members, any more questions? Thank you to our testifiers today. It was very wonderful information. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you, members. Thank you to the chairs. I am excited to hear this. I think that, you know, we have incredible opportunities. Sometimes we come to these committees and we feel like if we don't have any money, we don't even want to start the conversation. And I don't think that that's necessarily true. So I am excited to hear what is happening at the community level and how we can use some of their input and their ideas to begin to really expand this great work that we're doing. We're going to have a hearing, actually, on best practices that will, and I encourage you to please bring ideas from your own districts about issues that are working, and especially those ideas that districts are moving on their own without having to come to us for changing legislation, and so they have you know, they are making tremendous impact. I also encourage you to please contact I am going to repeat right now. We're going to do a formal announcement towards the end of the week, but we're going to have 4 working committees, and they are going to be led by bipartisan chairs. These working committees are this committee. We're going to call it Pre-K-20, because obviously everybody's talking about the early childhood piece and how we need to connect that to post-secondary experiences for kids. Senator Kent and Senator Rood will be leading that effort. Please feel free to contact them and let them know if you're interested in serving in that working committee. We're going to have Senators Franson, Senator Halverson, and Senator Nelson leading the early childhood piece. The reason we have 3 senators leading into this is because we're going to really be reviewing our connection with DHS, Department of Human Services, and how the funding for DHS and early learning in education connect. So there would be a lot of need for the senators to be connecting the work that they do in the different committees. And then we are going to be really diving into a conversation about assessment and testing of students. And Senator Dahl is going to be leading that effort with Senator Nino that I hope we have the two of you helping us figure out, you know, how do we, in all of these reforms, how do we really put our arms around what's in there, what is not in there, do we have too much, and if we're proposing new ideas, do we really need more tests? And I think we're hearing that we don't. We need to get rid of some tests. So that's something that we're going to be doing right away. And then the final piece is this whole issue about supporting teachers and conducting evaluation and figuring out how QComp is going to connect to, you know, the work that we do in the future in terms of evaluating teachers. And Senator Clausen and Senator Peterson will be leading that effort. And our, you know, we will move as quickly as we can. Senators, please convene. Connect with each other, let each other know what your interests are, and I think some of you have begun to organize some ideas that we want to propose, and we're going to be asking you to lead these conversations and chair those committee hearings when necessary. Do you have any questions? If not, we can adjourn for now. Thank you.